potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies, The King's Daughter, Redeeming Love, How I Met Your Father, Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, and Peacemaker. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Impulse, which is an old movie from 1984. I have a good reason to talk about it. Just stay tuned. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
It was kind of a slow news week for movies, but let's take a look at the box office, just so to speak. It's actually a relatively slow box office week. I mean, you had Scream come out last week, and that did quite well. It made $30 million, which is really good. It's good for January. It's good for the pandemic. It's not quite as good as the previous Scream movies, and that's important to note because, well, the last Scream movie was 10 years ago, and then the ones before that were 10 years before that. So, you know, if you were to compare it inflation-wise, it was a very, very soft opening for the Scream franchise, even though it was right around in line with what it should have been back in 1999 or 2000. But still, pandemic going on, and it's a January release, which I think it's still a good, it's a good number for them. It depends on how well it holds, because of course, Spider-Man No Way Home, this was the first one that ever knocked Spider-Man off of the number one spot. But the difference is Spider-Man has been out for a month, and it was just a massive juggernaut of a movie, and it's over $700 million. It should start slowing down now. I think a lot of people are wondering if they're going to go toe-to-toe. It depends on how much Spider-Man eases. I mean, Spider-Man only eased less than 40% last week from a week to week, and Scream being a horror film, a slasher, a January title, it is likely in for a big drop this weekend. In the third place, you had Sing 2, which was doing fine with $8 million. I mean, it's made about $120 million so far, which is, again, quite good in the pandemic. This is sort of like, in a lot of ways, like The Greatest Showman. This never hit number one. It was not a big release that I think a lot of people were talking about, but it's done quite well in the marketplace. It's just been living under the shadow of Spider-Man No Way Home. Now, after Sing 2, those just top three movies, you have like the 355 and the Kingsman and Belle, which was another new release last weekend, but those were only in the $1 or $2 million range. When you get down to the eighth place, which was West Side Story, it made less than $1 million. And it's not good when you're in the bottom of the top 10 and you haven't made $1 million. What that says is, again, people aren't going to movies across the board. This is the impact of the pandemic. This is the impact of streaming. This is the impact of the Omicron variant. We are seeing suppressed numbers. I mean, number 10, what came in at number 10 was The Matrix Resurrections, which has been out for a month and has only made $35 million in the theaters. It made $800,000 last weekend. That's really, really small. People are not going to the movies as much right now, and the pandemic has a lot to do with it, but also it's, again, what draws people out, as I think we're seeing play out. What I've been talking about for years is the big event films, the big movies that are like Spider-Man, No Way Home, the stuff that people are anticipating and waiting for, those are going to do well and they're going to be fine. You know, the big blockbusters, but the average, the smaller movies are not going to do well. And it's going to lead to them questioning, do we keep the newness so it can drop onto a streaming service as a new film like Hotel Transylvania did this past week? And it's at the number one streaming movie. At least that's what Amazon's claiming. It's the number one movie streaming right now. So everything's not written yet for what's going to happen in the future. Now, the other thing I wanted to hit really quickly is the movies that I'm anticipating in 2022. And these are the ones, obviously, the ones that I think are going to do well. like I'm talking all the superhero movies I'm interested in. In particular, I'm really interested in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. I think that's going to be really interesting. Don't expect it to be numbers at the level of Spider-Man, but it's still something that I'm very much interested in seeing. The Batman, I'm just curious to see what they do with it, although I'm not chomping at the bit for that one. Into the Spider-Verse, it's getting a second movie. You got Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which is an animated movie. The Spider-Verse movies do tend to do well. I mean, obviously, Spider-Man No Way Home did. And then, of course, Thor Love and Thunder is one I'm looking forward to, as well as Black Adam, which comes from the Shazam universe, which is part of DC. I'm looking into that. And then there's some horror movies like Jordan Peele's Nope, which I'm looking forward to a lot. And Halloween Ends. I know that the Halloween Kills was a little bit polarizing. And then there's two other ones that I just kind of want to point out. Mission Impossible 7, just to see if it actually comes out. And Avatar 2, for the same reason. Is that actually going to come out in a year? I don't know. I mean, pandemic or not, I don't think that's going to impact whether they move Avatar 2. Who knows what's going on with James Cameron? But still, those are the movies I'm looking forward to this year. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Moon Knight, which is coming to Disney Plus on March 30th.
Hello, and welcome to Staying Awake.
I have a sleeping disorder. I can't tell the difference between my waking life and dreams.
Hello, and welcome to Staying Awake.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're alive. What's wrong with you, Mark?
Why did you call me Mark?
It must be very difficult. The voices in your head.
This is a Marvel Studios production on the Disney Plus service. It's going to be like Hawkeye or WandaVision or Loki. And I've liked all of those. I think that the live action series are really the way it goes. I mean, it's great to see the big movies and to have the tentpole releases, but I like the connective tissue that these series in both the Marvel universe and the Star Wars universe is doing to enrich the bigger movies. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to Moon Knight. It looks different. I don't know anything about the character, but I'm kind of excited about that because it'll be a brand new adaptation to me. What's great about a movie with a superhero that I don't know specifically or remember as a child is that if they don't get it exactly right, I'm not going to notice. I'm not going to be upset that they changed the costume or the character or some of the motivations or something. I'm okay with that. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, Disney Plus, at the end of March. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Everything Everywhere All at Once, which comes to theaters on March 25th.
I'm not your husband. I'm another version of him from another universe. I'm here because we need your help.
Very busy today. No time to help you.
Across the multiverse, I've seen thousands of Evelyns. You can access all their memories, their emotions, even their skills. There's a great evil spreading throughout the many verses. And you may be your only chance of stopping it.
This is from A24, and that's the best way to describe it. A24 is a very artistic company, and they have some bizarre movies, and they do some really neat stuff, and they dip into the independent circuit, and they do very artsy, weird stuff. And I remember when they came on the scene really strong, they had Spring Breakers, I think it's their first year, and I didn't particularly like that movie, but they had stuff like Enemy and Under Her Skin, which was a Scarlett Johansson film about an alien who stole the skin from another woman. It's bizarre. It's a really neat movie. And A24 always puts out some very fringe stuff, like they did The Witch, and they did The Green Knight last year, so Michelle Yeoh plays a woman who is able to access all the different alternate versions of herself across the multiverse, another multiverse movie. It's becoming very popular now. But this one looks really neat. I mean, it looks out there and bizarre, but I expect nothing else from A24. So looking forward to that one. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The King's Daughter and How I Met Your Father. to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about The King's Daughter. A woman raised in a convent is invited to Versailles by the king, only to discover she is his illegitimate daughter, and he has captured a mermaid he plans to slaughter for his own health.
Creature in the water.
You should not be swimming in there.
She called me.
She's certainly not of this world.
Nor am I.
The creature will be killed, placing the life force into our hands.
This is murder!
She is your pet.
She's all but human. Calling,
calling, calling. The mermaid must escape the king.
We're the only ones who can stop him.
Do you believe in coincidence?
No!
This movie is bizarre because it was not on my radar at all. I had seen it on the list of movies that were coming out this week, but I really didn't get much about it. And then I actually got a chance to see it, which, you know, I give them credit. I always give credit to a studio for having the cojones to actually show their movie. But what's funny is after I watched the movie, I looked it up and this movie was shot like 8 years ago. And that's usually not a good sign. I remember the last time you had movies that were shot almost a decade before was I remember when there was a writer's strike and there was that movie Pluto Nash, the Eddie Murphy movie. That was a great example of a movie that was sitting on the shelf and they dusted it off because they needed to put something in the theaters. And I feel that this is actually what kind of happened with this movie is it had been sitting there for 8 years. And finally they're like, well, there aren't a whole lot of movies coming out in January. Let's go ahead and drop this in there. Maybe we can make some money off of it. Now, it has a really great cast. It's got Pierce Brosnan. It's got K.S. Scodelario. It's got William Hurt. That's actually a really big cast. Pierce Brosnan plays Louis XIV. Kayla Scodelario, she plays his daughter, and it starts off like it's almost like a fairy tale because she's brought from ostensibly poverty in the convent. And she's brought in to do music for the king and then learns that she's his daughter. But it's based on a book by Vonda McIntyre. And so it has this fantasy element where there's mermaid in there. Like there's a scene where they're out there and they capture a mermaid. And I'm like, wait, this doesn't feel like a historical movie. And they do things with design. And they've done this before with movies where they've used purposely anachronistic fashions. Like when they're in Versailles and they're dressed up in modern gowns and clothes and stuff. They don't look like people out of a French painting from, you know, hundreds of years ago. And that doesn't bother me. The thing that bothers me about the movie is it's like everything they're aiming for a 10 and they're hitting about a 6, sometimes lower, whether it's the acting or the direction or the editing or the special effects. They're really trying their darndest, but I just don't think they got the oomph behind the movie. And even though, like I said, they've got a great cast and they've got reliable people, it feels almost like it should have been a movie that was on television. And I'm not talking about streaming services because the streaming services actually put out some quality entertainment. I'm talking about something like back in the 80s or 90s that would have been put on not even a premium cable, but like a basic cable or like a TV movie of the week. It just doesn't have the gravitas behind it, ironically, because Gravitas Pictures, I think, is the one that released this. But it doesn't have the gravitas behind it to really make it feel like it's a big screen movie. And it's kind of a clunky description. Like Pierce Brosnan, he's supposed to be Louis XIV, and Louis XIV was considered a great king. But you don't get the sense that he's a great king. I mean, he's still sort of the arrogant ruler because I'm the king, I can do whatever I want to. It's good to be the king kind of thing. But I can't tell whether he's, is he supposed to be a villain? Is he supposed to be a good guy? Is he supposed, it's not even a gray character. He doesn't even have a mix. It's just, it's almost like they can't decide whether they're making him good or bad. And I mean, does he love this daughter or is he just using her? And the mermaid looks terrible, but it's really roughly put together. It just doesn't feel like it should to be a major release. And that's, I mean, everything else, there's some clunky writing and some of the character arcs don't quite work together. But I can kind of see where this movie was sitting around for 8 years or more, but it's trying. And I give it credit because it's really trying. It just misses the mark a lot of times. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about How I Met Your Father. This is a series. It's on Hulu right now. Hilary Duff stars in this swapped gender spinoff of a woman navigating the dating pool in New York City.
This is the story of how I met your father. It was hard to live in the moment in 2022. There was always someplace else you could be, someone else you could be with.
I know this might sound crazy, but I've been on 87 Tinder dates this year.
Repeat after me. Today is the first chapter of my next great love story.
Screw being mature. Yes, we can still make bad choices for a few more years.
One of the big problems this show faces, and this is what you get when you get a spinoff or a reboot or a reimagining of something, is it really has to live up to the original. And that's very, very difficult, especially when you got a series that was as successful and loved and clicked so well as How I Met Your Mother. And even though I didn't watch it from the beginning, as I understand, it's one of those shows that click from the beginning. And usually a series, it's not uncommon, like even like something like Seinfeld. Seinfeld's a great series, but that first season's rough. It's not a great first season. And How I Met Your Father starts, and you just can't help but think it's not as good as How I Met Your Mother. Now, Hilary Duff's fine. Actually, I think she's okay in it because, you know, she plays the Ted Mosby character and he's kind of a dork and she's a little bit of a dork. And you've got Christopher Lowell and he's fine. He's basically the Robin character from How I Met Your Mother. And he's good. I mean, he's fine. I mean, the actor's almost 40, but he can play younger and I think he does a good job. And I think the two of them have a decent amount of chemistry. Where the problem of this kind of gelling comes into view is when you look at the rest of the cast. The friends, the people that they're along for the ride, you don't have the supporting cast that you do from How I Met Your Mother. You know, you don't have Jason Segel and Allison Hannigan and Neil Patrick Harris background that you do. Those three actors help support the show, possibly even more than Josh Radnor as Ted Mosby. But in this one, the supporting cast this year, they're not as interesting and it feels like they're going to need to retool it or change some things. And that can be very dangerous. And I mean, that's the way of life in sitcoms. It's not uncommon to see major cast change from season one to season two, or sometimes in the middle of season one. But when you're putting it up against such a beloved sitcom and everyone's going to hold that as a comparison, that's tough. I mean, it's fine. There's some jokes in there. Some of the jokes are like, there's one joke they have in one of the scenes. They're joking about subways, something with the subway in New York. And I'm like, well, this is very New York centric. People who don't live in New York don't get the joke about how you swipe your card. It's just, that's a very New York thing. So if you're making it for people in New York, great. But, and then they have to ride the subway in New York. So you're really making this joke just for people who ride the subway in New York. Anybody outside of that, it's lost on them. So the show's fine. I don't hate it, but it just doesn't have a magic touch yet. And it might do with a retool. Who knows? I've seen stranger things happen with terrible sitcoms that have taken a turn in the second or third season. But, you know, just looking at the first couple episodes, How I Met Your Father, I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Redeeming Love and Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, and let's talk about the next film on the docket, and that is Redeeming Love. During the gold rush, a woman who was orphaned and sold into a brothel meets a man who wants to settle down with her in a loving marriage.
The only girls who leave here are too old, too sick to work, or dead.
I'm gonna kill you.
She's something to see, ain't she? No one gets within a foot of her for free.
I have to meet her.
It's your pleasure, mister.
I didn't come here for that.
You're gonna marry me. Take me away from here. Give me the life I deserve.
Mm-hmm.
I've got too many demons. I don't know how to love.
I'm gonna just let everybody know, I've not read the book this is based on. I know that the book, Redeeming Love, is, and it's been around for like 30 years, is a beloved book. I know there's a lot of people who love it. It's very popular, especially in Christian and faith-based crowds. You wouldn't know because I've seen the cover of the book. It just looks like a standard romance book, but it is a faith-based book, and it's apparently an allegory of the book of Hosea. I'm not a theologian, so I don't really know the depth of this. I know that there's a lot of people like, oh, this has changed my life. The book has. I've not read the book. I can't offer an opinion of the book. I can offer an opinion of the movie, though. And you know how I said with The King's Daughter, it feels like it should have been on television, like back in the 90s? I kind of feel the same way about Redeeming Love. Redeeming Love feels like a Hallmark-type movie that's trying to be edgier. Because generally, the Hallmark movies don't have the really rough backstory of a woman working in a brothel since she was like 8 or something like that. They're a little bit softer and a little bit nicer. They're sort of the sweet romances. This one, it has that level of quality you'd expect from a Hallmark type movie, but it does try to be a little more hard edged. And it has, I mean, because it's very unpleasant, the stuff going on in here. I mean, she grew up and her father was an illegitimate child, and her mother was left into poverty by her father because she was just a mistress. And then she ends up, I think she dies of like tuberculosis, and she's a little kid. And then she's kind of put into whatever the system was out there in California back in the 1840s. And she ends up in this brothel and becomes this well-known prostitute. And it's supposed to show enduring love, redeeming love, so to speak. But it's also supposed to show forgiveness. I've read that that's sort of the purpose of the story, is about dalliances and straying away and forgiveness. And that's sort of the essence of the book of Hosea. I'm not, like I said, I'm not familiar with it. But here's the problem that I have with this movie. And it's from a theological standpoint. And like I said, I'm not a theologian, but there's things that don't quite rub right with me. Like the first thing is, the main character has been traumatized, sometimes brutally, since she was a child. And she has not had a good life. And I'm not just talking about somebody who had a rough life. This is a horrible, horrible life for this girl. And she's trapped, and she's treated as garbage, and she's treated as properly, and she's been sexually assaulted for as long back as she can remember. And and she is a very damaged person. And they didn't have therapy back in 1850 in the gold rush towns, but that's sort of what drives her when they end up getting married. That's what drives her away. And, you know, she abandons him because she doesn't think she's good enough, or like she doesn't think she can have kids. And we'll get to that in a minute. But he wants kids. And so she leaves, and it's the whole thing. Well, I'll forgive her when she comes back. And it almost treats it like, oh, you're just, it conflates sinning with reaction to trauma untreated whatsoever. And I don't think that's fair, because I don't think you can treat just everyday sin, just that original sin characteristic, as what this girl has been brutalized. And that's very different than what I'd like to refer to as like just everyday sinning. And there's also a huge difference for her to make bad decisions in her state of mind compared to just a person who is like being selfish. I mean, I don't think it sends a good message about that. I also had a real problem with that, the whole idea of her thinking she can't get pregnant. And he's like, well, I'll just, you know, you don't know for sure and everything. And look, there are some women who can't conceive. And I think this sends a grossly wrong message that you could conceive if you have enough faith and you pray hard enough. Well, there are women out there who aren't going to conceive no matter how strong their faith is and no matter how much they pray. And I think that that sends the absolute wrong message that, again, it's a woman's fault if she doesn't conceive, and she just doesn't have enough faith. She didn't pray hard enough. And that's why there are things to overcome. And sometimes you have very serious medical and biological reasons why it can't happen. And so that's another thing. I think and then on top of it, it's like he sees her, and I guess he's spoken to by God. I kind of missed that part, but he refers to it later. And it's like this love at first sight thing. And look, I believe in love at first meet. I don't believe in love at first sight, because sight doesn't give you any idea of the person's personality and character and soul. And you just see somebody and I'm like, oh yeah, sure. I mean, how many times you see a character on TV and you say, oh, they're so beautiful, they're so wonderful, they're so gorgeous, and you fall in love, I'm in love at first sight with Gal Gadot, but you've never met her. You don't know what she's like. In fact, you have no idea what she's like personally, and very few people do, because she's marketing herself out there, and most of what you see is, even as a person, your public persona is not your personal persona. So the love at first sight idea of I find you pretty and I want to take you home and have sex and marry you. And it's because it's so tied to religion in this movie, it opens that door to basically a man staking claim. Because even then, for as much as she's been owned by everybody, this guy's like, I decided I'm going to marry you. And that's what God wants. And nobody's going to get in my way. And that's, again, that's a very dangerous thing. Because I have literally seen situations where that stuff's happened. And it gets scary because the woman's like, no, I don't want to be with you. And I've seen some crazy stuff in my life. So, but even then, you take out all that theology stuff, redeeming love is just kind of boring. So I'm going to say it totally sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about something nice. Fraggle Rock Back to the Rock. The Jim Henson Company reboots this 80s television series on Apple TV Plus about a group of creatures that live underground and explore the world above.
Hold on to your balubiuses, because I know exactly where we should go.
Tell us in song.
I thought you'd never ask!
Okay, it's a party down in Fraggle Rock today. Okay, everyone's invited to that.
I never watched Fraggle Rock, partly because I didn't have HBO when I was a kid. But I remember when it came out, it was after the Muppets, and it was a new venture for the Jim Henson Company. And I always wanted to see it. And I remember I got around to seeing the original series when Disney released it on DVD. And I wasn't terribly impressed. It didn't really catch me. It didn't jazz me. And I just never thought about it over the years. But apparently Apple TV Plus has gone and it's bought the Fraggle Rock collection. So you can watch the entire original series on Apple TV Plus if you have that. It's worth getting if you want to see it or you want to show that to your kids. But there's also, about 2 years ago, they did these quarantine episodes of Fraggle Rock. And they're like 5 minutes long. And then there's like five or six of them. And they're on Apple TV Plus. They don't hold up as well because they're shot in people's homes. And, you know, it's basically the Fraggle version of a Zoom call. And the last thing people want to see now is more people on Zoom. But this new Fraggle Rock, it's very colorful. It's bright. It's fun. It's not preschool programming. So it's higher up than Sesame Street, but it's not at the grown up level of the Muppets. The Muppets were very subversive and they were cute, but they also went for grown ups as well. They did a lot of stuff that went over the kids' head. Fraggle Rock is a little more straightforward kids stuff. Good music, lots of fun. A lot of the original voice cast is back, those that are available. You know, I enjoyed it. I think it's something, I mean, I'm not going to probably watch any more of it because I'm 50. But, you know, if I were a kid, if I were a 10-year-old, I could see myself checking this out periodically. So, yeah, I'm going to say Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Peacemaker and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Impulse. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the new reviews and talk about Peacemaker. John Cena stars in this series about his character from the Suicide Squad who works with a black ops organization trying to take down a new threat of invasion.
Have you ever heard of a guy named Peacemaker?
No.
He is a trained killer. We've got trouble with that maniac.
I thought you were in prison for life.
I work for the government.
Post office?
You think they'd let me out of prison and deliver mail?
I don't know. It's the first government job I could think of.
I kill people for them, okay?
This task force doesn't officially exist.
He told me to kill kids. He didn't say why.
I thought you loved peace, no matter how many men, women, and children you needed to kill to get it.
This is on HBO Max. They dropped last week 3 episodes on Thursday, and this week they did a single episode on Thursday, and I think they're going to keep those running for the next, I think it's like 8 episodes. That's usually how much these things run. And I love The Suicide Squad. It was one of my favorite movies of last summer. And I think John Cena is very, very funny. I think he's a good actor. I think he actually has some acting chops on him. I mean, he's the first wrestler since The Rock that I think could actually do some stuff with bigger stuff in Hollywood. And I think he's a lot of fun, and I love James Gunn's stuff. Now, James Gunn, I believe, wrote all of Peacemaker, and he directs, I think, half the episode, but it's very much the same flavor and humor and ideas. I mean, it's clear it's done by the same person who did The Suicide Squad that came out last summer. Now, it's a much smaller group of characters. They're the ones who worked in the control room and betrayed Amanda Waller, played by Viola Davis, and so they're given a crap duty to babysit him, and it's irreverent and funny, but it actually is making very specific points, because they took the character in The Suicide Squad, and the Peacemaker, he was kind of a bad dude. I mean, he was over the top and ridiculous, and he has that great line where he's like, I love peace, and I don't care how many men, women, or children I have to kill to achieve that. And it's a bit of a caricature, but they do deconstruct his character better. They actually put him together and they give him some real pathos and some backstory. They bring in his father, who's played by Robert Patrick, and he was a white supremacist superhero in the past, and he still helps his son out at times, but there's a strained relationship there. And it does examine his character, and it gives John Cena a chance to be more than just mugging at the camera and being obnoxious, which is kind of all he did in Suicide Squad. But this is a lot of fun. It's very funny, but it's very dark, and it's very R-rated. But I was impressed with this, because you basically took a somewhat of a villain from this movie, and you're really giving it some depth. And it's not as big as a superhero movie, and that's okay, because it's more episodic. And, you know, just as the Marvel series on Disney Plus enrich that Marvel universe, this can enrich the DC universe. And I hope they do more of these one-off shows about the different characters, because I've always said comic books are episodic stories. And if you were reading comic books in the 80s, before they did Crisis on Infinite Earth, where they kind of rebooted everything and they brought all the characters together, you may have been reading Green Arrow or The Flash. Those were never the biggest the world's going to end type stories. They save those for these crossover events or for super powerful superheroes like Superman. You know, not everything is about a city getting destroyed. And that's how they play these shorter series out. And I hope they do this with some good characters and at least get good people behind it. DC is still sort of scattered around. They don't know what they're doing with Batman and Superman. I think they're trying to figure out where they're going to go with Superman. But they clearly have been playing around with that with like the Shazam properties. And I'm looking forward to them doing more of this so that we're not just getting stuff on CW. You know, the CW teen movies, those are fine, and I have no problem with that. Fine, do the Superman and Lois Lane stories, do Supergirl, do Arrow, do Flash. Keep those going. But I like the idea of putting together stuff like Peacemaker and these background characters in the HBO Max series, and then you can build the universe back up, because the thing that has always dogged DC has been they don't have an overall view of the universe of all the different characters and how they can bridge them together. They went too fast to get to the Justice League, and they just need to, they need to fill out the gallery first before they can start using people from that gallery. So I have a blast with Peacemaker. It's a lot of fun, and it's irreverent. And like James Gunn's stuff, it has a lot of points to be made, but it's very inappropriate and very funny in its delivery. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema round. This week, I want to put a spotlight on a movie, and it's actually kind of a hard movie to find. It's called Impulse, and it came out in 1984. The reason I want to highlight it, I don't know why I ran into this trailer. but something made me look it up. And it is probably one of the most effective trailers I've ever seen. And I was about 13 in 1984, and I remember going and seeing movies, you know, including stuff like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom or Ghostbusters or whatever, and I would see the trailer for Impulse. And it has stuck with me. This movie, I remember seeing it years ago, and I wasn't a huge fan of it then. I thought it was sort of soft for what the trailer gives you, but the trailer is literally one of the most compelling trailers I've ever seen. It's a powerful trailer. So I'm going to play a part of it, and then we'll talk a little bit about the movie. The residents of a small Midwestern town suddenly start acting out their darkest desires with no thought of consequence.
Imagine what would happen if every desire, every urge, every passion, locked deep inside all of us, suddenly exploded. Impulse. The madness inside us all.
Like I said, I watched this several years ago because it was rated R and it has some titillating sexual things in the trailer that sort of, you know, lit my fire when I was 13. My mom wasn't going to take me to see it, but I ended up watching it on VHS at some point in my 20s, and I was unimpressed. I decided to go back to see it. I found it on YouTube. Somebody had posted it on YouTube. You can't find, it's not on any streaming service, and it's not even available to rent on a streaming service. You can't even get it like through Vudu. Now, I believe there are still VHS and DVD and Blu-ray copies floating around out there. Some of them are international, so you can get a copy of it. And I don't know how long the YouTube version wasn't all that great. But when I went and I found the trailer, it kind of right on the side, it's like linked that, and I started looking at it again. And it's a really interesting story because it is this story about people losing their inhibitions. It's them having a massive city-wide or town-wide impulse control problem. And there's a reason for it. But it's a very compelling idea. And I'm like, this thing could be remade. And it was meant to be a thriller, and it is kind of a thriller, but they're a little bit mundane about how they react to some of the things that are going on. They're like, oh, we should look into this. It's sort of like the movie Tarantula, with the 1950s movie with John Agar, where they're sort of nonplussed by this giant tarantula running around. I mean, they're upset when it's there, but then they're just like, let's go get a bite to eat before we figure out what to do with this. And that's kind of how they are in Impulse. They realize something's going on. Meg Tilly and Tim Matheson are the couple that are coming back home to Meg Tilly's family because her mother shoots herself, and they don't know why, and the characters, he's a doctor, she's a dancer, which Meg Tilly really was, or is. I mean, I guess she's probably not dancing much now because she's older. But Tim Matheson's character is a doctor, and so he's, of course, realizing there's something going on. People are acting weird, and it's clear that something's happening, and it's happening citywide, so they wonder, you know, is there something in the food? Is there something in the water? Is there something in the air? And they're trying to track that down, and he could have really sounded the alarm, but he does. I mean, it's just, it doesn't quite know where to go, but boy, it's such a great idea and a great concept, and it's worth checking out just for almost like watching this movie as a what could be done today if they made a remake of this. And I know there's a lot of people who don't like remakes, but when you have a movie like this that kind of falls into obscurity, they could really do an interesting thing with this, you know, if they had it in the right hands. So I'm going to have to say I liked it better now, and sort of looking back and reflecting on what it wasn't, and especially kind of how it was framed, I'm still going to say it kind of rocks. But, you know, it's kind of tough to find.
It kind of rocks.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray, we have The Addams Family 2, Last Night in Soho, and Titane as new releases. And then in the vintage titles, we've got Akira in 4K, A Hard Day's Night, The Criterion Collection, The Toolbox Murders in 4K, Liar Liar, and Candyman 3, Day of the Dead. And that's it. I need to go. Next week, I'll be back and talking about Cyrano. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.